Welcome to the 2013 ASCII Paw Never Had a Legal Drink panel. My name is Frank and I'm an alcoholic. Please help me open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. Thus, respectfully ask that no AA speaker or indeed any AA member be identified by full name in the published or broadcast reports in our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential in the effort to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. In our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles and pictures as AA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. In keeping with this principle, please do not post recognizable photos of identified AA members on websites accessible to the public, including unrestricted pages on social networking sites. I would now like to introduce our panel members. We have James. We have Mo. And last but not least, we have Melissa. They will be sharing on Never Had a Legal Drink. They got sober before the age of 21 and have never had a legal drink. That's awesome. First to the stage, James. Yeah. Mo.
Hey, thanks. I'm Mo. I'm an alcoholic. I can feel the vibration. I can feel it. It's so much energy in the room. I'm a little bit bummed that you didn't leave those chicken fingers and fries up here for me. But I guess that probably would be very good for the recording for me to be talking with food in my mouth. I'm really happy to be here. I'm from Denver, Colorado. And I have a home group out there. It's the Denver Thursday Night Group. And I'm really happy to be out here. Thanks to Mike and Emily for hosting me. And I'm honored to speak on this panel, you know. And I think all I really have to say is that, like, you know, I got sober. And then I never had a legal drink. That's all I got. No, I'm just kidding. When I was talking to people about this panel, I kept on saying to them, I'm speaking on, I've never had a sober drink. And they were like, okay, alright, like, how does that work? What do you mean? And so that's obviously true also. But yeah, I've never had a legal drink. I got sober when I was 15, like right before I was 16. I got started early. I started when I was 13, so my drinking career was 2 years long. And that was it. I hit it hard, started blacking out or passing out or throwing up at parties and crossing all the lines in the sand really quickly. And, you know, I ended up seeing countless shrinks as well as other, started going to different programs when I was young. And finally, when I was 15, I got put into a treatment program, which I know that's how a lot of us get here. There's so much love going on here. So I know that's how a lot of us got here. It was through treatment programs or through, if you're coming young, there's probably other forces at play. But I know that those other forces at play that may get us here are not the things that keep us here. You know, and so for me, I came into a treatment program and I was overwhelmed by the awareness that I gained of seeing other people that had the same experience as me that were not getting fucked up. And I hope it's okay if I cuss, because that's just going to happen. That weren't getting loaded, and I realized that like they had something in their eyes, they were really attractive. I was like, whoa, what are these people about? They seemed really free, and I wanted what they had. I stuck around. I got sober, and then I was in the program. The program in aftercare. I stayed in there from around like 16 to 18, so about 2 years. And I'm thinking at 18, I'm starting to get to the feeling like, alright, like there's no more trouble on my plate. And I have a good relationship now. I have a job. Things are going well. I don't really need to be sober, And at the same time, when that happened, I was graduating high school. I was going to get out of the treatment program. And, as most instances would have it, of course, like I'm not going to, probably not going to stay sober, if I leave this treatment program, I'm like a young guy, whatever. Same time as I'm feeling that way, my dad committed suicide. And my dad and I, previously to me getting sober, he and I used to get loaded together. And, that's kind of an intense thing to say in general. But, obviously, that was very pivotal and affected me deeply. But the thing that I took away from it that I wanted to bring up here today was just the awareness that I'll look back on that and realize that a couple of things that, if I leave here, I've seen so many instances where if I leave here, the window of hope, the window of opportunity to come back gets a little bit smaller each time. And I used to think that I could leave here, I could come in, get sober, get my head straight, I'd be able to figure out what I was doing wrong or whatever, and I'd be able to go out and be able to manage it better, But in addition to that experience, I've seen other people that I knew in that same treatment program that I got in when I was 15. My good friend Johnny, who he was the one who started getting me loaded, who then later was telling me, like, dude, you're going over the limit. What are you doing? He ended up committing suicide. And I don't want to, I'm going to stop myself right there with, negative tales, because that's really heavy. But I love the line in the book where it says, some are surprised with our seeming levity, and worldly experience in the big book, where it says like we have these really heavy experiences and really heavy stories, but also we find it necessary to have the belief that life's not a vale of tears, and that I can still be really happy. But I also don't like to turn my blind eye to those experiences, because it helps me to realize the true blessing that I was given by the opportunity to be able to come in at the time that I did. And also just to extrapolate beyond the whole idea of really what is that? The fact of that I got sober young, for me, what it was like just a huge reservation, Like for the whole time I was sober, I always had the thought of I never did acid. I know this is AA, but I'm just going to share honestly. I'm an alcoholic, but I was like, I never had these other experiences. I've never tried the new drinks that are out there. I never did this, I never went bar hopping, all that stuff. Were all reservations for me, and slowly over the years I've identified those reservations that I had and realized really what that is. It's not like an experience that I'm going to miss out on, that I'm going to regret, holy shit, I never got to do that cool thing that I wanted to do. Really what that is things that I hold on to that are small little lies that I keep inside of me, that keeps me disconnected from you, it keeps me disconnected from God, it keeps me disconnected from true happiness, it keeps me disconnected from really understanding what it is that I really want. And I thought those were the things that I wanted for so long, keep an eye on my time. and I love the idea of thinking, when I think about happiness, that all I can see is the door. And what that door looks like to me, it looks like so many different things throughout my life. It looks like girls, looks like me going back out and being able to party in my 20s and having like a cool condo in the city, and I'm gonna like get laid a lot, and so I'm gonna be like the super playboy even though I'm like not that attractive. You know, all these things are like the door to happiness, but what I thought it was gonna look like. But truly, like, I don't even, my experience has said, it's true that I don't actually want what I think I want. You know, like, that's one of the biggest dishonesties that came out of all my inventories is, like, I don't actually want what I want. What I'm seeing is, like, a door that I think if I open that door, there's going to be happiness on the other side. But my experience has shown every time I open that door, the reason that I'm here is because I've never gotten to happiness on the other side. It's always been an illusion. The grass is greener, you know, and the blessings that I've gotten from identifying those illusions, those reservations, the reasons that I thought that I shouldn't stick around, that I shouldn't take this seriously, that thinking that you know, I could outgrow this, by identifying all those dishonesties, you know, God and life on life's terms has put other blessings in my life that I never even knew that I wanted. The opportunity to be there for my family. Like, I never thought I would want that. You know, that's today one of the things that I'm most grateful for. I've met people in the program that I get to, like, travel around the country and visit now. That, like, let me into their home and trust me. I got to go to Beijing, China for 2 weeks. Cause I have a friend that I just met through a program, or met through AA, and him and his girlfriend went and lived in China. They were gonna teach there. And they're like, hey, why don't you come out and visit? A free place to stay. My girlfriend speaks Mandarin. Like, when are you gonna have this opportunity for us to show you around China? All you gotta do is pay for the plane ticket. Like, what? You know, like, I'm going to get to visit the other side of the world. Countless opportunities like that, you know. But the thing that I'm most grateful for today, that I talked to a friend at my home group, who he was a guy who had, like, you know, he got sober young. He got, like, 3 to 5, I can't remember, it was, like, 3 to 5 years sober. And he ended up getting a job. He was working as a, I don't know what he's doing, something that reminds me of Mad Men, where he's, like, dressed up really nice and they're playing golf and stuff. So he's, like, got this really nice job. And he met these really cool people. And he's like, well, they drink and they still get their job done. So, like, that's cool. You know, I'm like a man now. I'm like a professional. You know, I'm going to drink. And he started drinking. And he said he came back now, like, 3 years later after he started drinking. Then he realized, he was like, there's still a hole inside of me. There's still something different about me than these other people. They're not drinking like me because they don't have that hole inside that drove them to, you know, crazy unmanageability and, like, yeah, like, basically getting here to, like, relearn how to live life. You know, that didn't happen for them. And his experience was that he came back and he told me, he's like, the two biggest things that I took for granted when I started drinking again that I forgot about was the two blessings of, like, truly just having people trust me and freedom. You know, simple as that is. Yeah, so I'm really grateful to be here. And, you know, if anything, like, the last thing I'll say before I stop talking really fast as I do, just to take a look within yourself, to not rob yourself of really, like, what it is that, like, to take a look at, like, what I want. What are my reservations? What are the things that are keeping me separated from really being able to feel connected with people? This is the cheesiest term, but what's my ooga booga bag? You know what I mean? Like, what are my secrets that I'm holding on to? Because those secrets, I'm only as sick as my secrets. And to look within those secrets, because I'm only robbing myself the opportunity to be close with people and to truly understand, like, what it is I want. You know, because I've lied to myself so many times, and the crazy part about me is I lie to myself, and then I believe the lie. And that's something that, you know, even though I've grown up now and I'm 11 years sober today and I'm 26, you know, and I'll get embarrassed telling people that, like, the people do the math real quick. They're like, so you're sober? And they're like, how long? And I'm 11 years. How old are you? 26. And they're like, just kind of like all of a sudden, what? You know, and I used to feel embarrassed about that, like I was an anomaly. And today, you know, it just doesn't really matter. You know, there's so many deeper, more important things that I've gotten to be blessed with in life that have come from me being sober that, like, what people I don't know think about me, like, I don't even know you. It's just nothingness. It doesn't matter. And so I'm really happy to be here. Also, I just have to note, this is the first meeting I've ever been in where it's predominantly dominated by women. And I'm stoked about that. That's like, we were talking about that before, and that's really awesome. Just because, you know, AA is, you know, largely composed, more dominated by men. But yeah, this is great. So I'm really happy to speak here for multiple. Yeah, so. Thanks so much. I appreciate this opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you, Mo. Next up, can you please help me welcome James?
Yeah!
I'm James, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi! James! Come on, James!
Thank you. My sobriety date is April 14th of 1997. I got sober when I was 15 years old.
I was born in 1997.
Oh, man. No, it's that's awesome. It's funny because now, you know, I'll be telling stories to friends of mine that are also sober, you know, relatively new to the program, and I'll talk about stuff, you know, when I was first getting sober, and they'd love to give me shit like that. They'll like, I was three. You know, I grew up in a family where my mom really didn't drink at all, and my dad drank alcoholically. So I didn't have an understanding at all as a kid what alcoholism or alcoholic drinking was. From my observation, watching my parents, you know, you either drink a lot or you don't drink at all. That was my understanding, you know, and I actually didn't realize what was referred to as normal drinking, or average temperate drinker, or social drinking that they talk about in the book. I didn't realize what that was until I'd been sober a few years. And then when I really understood what normal drinking or social drinking was, I immediately understood that that was not my relationship with alcohol. And I can remember, growing up, you know, I had this fascination with alcohol as a kid, as a very, very young kid. In my family, you know, drinking was something that a lot of the people did. So when I was a little kid, I had a little beer mug, and it had a teddy bear on it and had my name on it. And you know, whenever the adults had the beer out, they would, you know, would give me some of the beer, it's not like I was getting totally hammered at 2 years old or anything, you know, but I had this fascination with it, right? And I understood that there was something special about alcohol that wasn't as special about when I had orange juice or, you know, like milk. It was not as special as when I had beer, right? And my grandma told me this story that I was three or so, and my grandparents at the time were living in Tennessee, like right in the middle of the Bible Belt. And I think it was a Sunday. My grandmother had taken me to the grocery store with her, and I was trying to get her to buy me beer. and then she of course said no because, right, because I'm three. And then I used another skill which I developed long before I drank alcoholically, which is manipulation. And I gave her the sad eyes. But Papa lets me have beer. How disturbing is that? If you're it's probably funny, right? If you're an alcoholic like me. And that seems totally normal. Like, yeah, like, if you were going to get some free beer, why wouldn't you, right? But I think to somebody who is normal, who didn't grow up in an alcoholic family, or who doesn't have an understanding of the disease of alcoholism, that would be very disturbing, right? But I don't have that understanding when it comes to alcohol. You know, I relate to it differently than the majority of the population. So, And growing up, you know, that selfishness pervaded, right? I was always like, well, if I wanted something, I would take it, right? It didn't matter if it belonged to me or if I had enough money to purchase it, like, you know, I wanted it. And it got that way, it really got that way with alcohol, you know, and so the first time I got drunk, I was 11 years old, and my grandparents had come to visit. At the time, my dad was in the military, so we moved around a lot, and at the time,
we lived in this town in Germany, and we lived at the top of this hill, and at the bottom of the hill they had this like it's like bar slash restaurant place. So we're down there, and my grandpa and my dad are drinking, and my dad's a total cheapskate, so he brought beer with him, and he's like pouring it into his glass when the waitress isn't looking. And so I'm going back and forth between grandpa and dad and getting sips off of their beer, and then the magic happened, right? And I can remember we're walking back up to the house, and there was this big wall on the right of the sidewalk, and it's a pretty big drop from the sidewalk down to the street. So my dad's kind of riding this wall, and then I'm like falling off of the sidewalk and getting back up on the sidewalk. And again, if you don't come from an alcoholic family or you're not alcoholic, seeing a father and his 11-year-old son drunk walking home would be like disturbing, right? But for me, it was magical. You know, I understood. I was like, this is why dad drinks so much, you know? And I can remember before that, you know, being in middle school, the most important thing on earth to me was you know, like having friends and people not thinking I'm a total loser, right? And I remember this one time my dad he loved to get hammered and make these shelves. He'd like stain them and put them together and stuff. And I remember him tripping over one of the pieces of wood and he blamed it on the wind, and he was like, oh, it's windy out here. And I knew it wasn't the wind, and my friends knew it wasn't the wind. You know, he was drunk. And I remember, like, I was so embarrassed, right? I remember thinking to myself, and this is really, I meant this to the core of my being. I remember thinking to myself, I'm never going to be like that. You know, I'm never going to do that to my kids. I'm not going to be that kind of person. And I really meant it. And what I found out later was that when it comes to alcohol, giving my word or making a promise or even promising myself mean nothing. And it doesn't mean that I don't care, and it doesn't mean that I don't mean them, and it doesn't mean that I wouldn't give anything to fulfill those promises. I'm just incapable. On my own device, I'm incapable of keeping those promises. And that's what I learned when I finally made it to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I didn't understand that at the time. So, you know, we moved back to the United States, and I started hanging out with the trouble. I always find the troublemakers, right? Even now that I'm sober, I'll still find the troublemakers. So I'm hanging out with this guy, and he's super into this show called Beavis and Butthead, and I was really into the show as well. They're like my idols. If anybody's not familiar, it's basically like these two, it's a cartoon show, these two kids that are probably like sophomores in high school, and they basically like huff gasoline and glue and try to get drunk and break stuff, right? So they were my idols. And I knew I was gonna get along with this kid, and we start drinking and doing some other stuff, and you know, it was, when I think back on it, you know, what happened to me then was that alcohol just made my life that much better, right? It made things a little bit more interesting, a little bit more fun. It made me funny, easier to get along with, right? It was like adding a plus onto my life, right? And at some point, alcohol no longer became that. At some point, alcohol was basically my reason for continuing to live, right? If somebody had sat me down and said, you will never be able to drink alcohol again, and could offer me no solution to my life, I would have done my best to end it. Because my problem is that I didn't know how to live life sober, you know? I mean, what do you do when you're happy, right? You drink. What do you do when you're sad? You drink. What do you do when somebody pisses you off? You drink. Right? And that's just how I knew how to deal with things. And at some point I crossed that line, you know, where, I just, any desire I had to stop drinking wasn't of any use anymore. I was seeing mental health professional, well, a couple of them. I don't know if they're psychologists or psychiatrists. I'm not really sure what the difference is, but anyways, people that you pay money to treat your mental condition. Any opportunity I had to drink, you know, I would do it. I'm gonna date myself again here. So we had pagers. It's like a really trashy cell phone for people who aren't familiar, right? So I would get a page from somebody that I knew that I drank with, and I would just stop whatever I was doing. And that included school, right? I'd be in school and I'd, time to leave, and I'd just get up and leave class you know, I knew my dad's handwriting and signature weren't on file, so what would I do? I'd write my note and, oh, signed by Mr. West, you know, and you know, that was what I had going for me was alcohol. And, but I kept getting more and more miserable, right? And I can remember this time I crossing the road. I would just cross the road without looking and just like, oh man, if somebody would just hit me, right? Because I'd gotten close before, like I had a gun in my mouth and it was loaded, but I just couldn't pull the trigger, right? And, you know, I didn't have enough will at the time to do it myself, but I certainly didn't value my life or have a bright future ahead of me as far as I was concerned, right? And, so what ended up happening was a friend of mine that I would drink with, he started going to these treatment meetings, right? And so he invites me along and I go there and what I found, and this place, it was this interesting place. I describe it like as kind of like half treatment center, half cult, because pretty much that's what it was. But there's, you know, more to it, but I'm not going to get into all that. But anyway, so I start going to these treatment meetings with this friend of mine. And what I found there was I found the problem, right? Because up until that point, I had just assumed that I was just insane, right? And I'm going to end up killing myself or somebody else or getting locked up or whatever, right? I didn't have a bright future, like I said. But when I got there, there were people who had the same experiences that I did. There were people that felt the same way that I did. And the thing we all had in common was the alcohol, right? And the drugs, I have drugs in my story. If you don't, that's totally fine. You know, the requirement for membership here is a desire to stop drinking. So anyway, in this, you know, treatment place going to the meetings and so they said, why don't you make a commitment to stop drinking and stop? Well, first I thought when they said sober, I thought they meant, you know, not using drugs. And I was like, well, I haven't used drugs in a little while. I can do that. Right. And then I found out later they meant also not drinking. And that I thought might be a little more difficult. But I stopped drinking and I never thought that it would be difficult. Right. I thought, because I didn't have an understanding about alcoholism, I thought, well, if I make a decision to stop drinking, then I'll stop drinking, right? So I did, and it lasted, I don't know, maybe 4 weeks or something. And then I had this experience where I was hanging out with a bunch of people that I used to drink with, and they asked me if I wanted someone, I said no, and they asked me again, and I said no. And he asked me one more time, and I thought to myself, well, it's really cold up here, because we went camping in the snow, because I was really smart, and I was like, well, if I drink this, I'll feel warmer, right? And so I started drinking, you know, and then I felt terrible the next day, and I said to myself, you know, I'm not going to do that again. And so I started off, you know, all right, I'm going to stay sober. And I made it a couple weeks, and then I had another problem. I had a resentment, right? Some people I thought had wronged me. And I didn't understand how to deal with that. So what do? You drink. And I don't drink alone because I don't have a problem. So I call my friend, like, get over here right now. We're getting drunk. And that was the last time that I drank. And I skated on the grace of God for a long time, you know. And please, if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous or if you're not new to Alcoholics Anonymous, please, the 12 steps are the solution that we have here, you know, and I will tell you that my life did not start really getting better until I started working the 12 steps, you know. So I get sober. I'm a sophomore in high school and the people that I get along with in high school are the people that, you know, that drink and use drugs, right? That didn't change just because I quit using them. That didn't change. And I was smoking cigarettes at the time. So, I mean, the only people who were smoking cigarettes at school were the people that drank and used drugs, right? So I'm still hanging out with these same people. Like, we're finding, you know, like secret spots where you can hide around school and smoke but I'm hanging out with all these people that I'm sober with now and eventually I was there for like three years. It was just, I don't know, long story again. Eventually they told me, okay, you know, you need to go on to AA, right? And so I end up in Alcoholics Anonymous and I struggled because when I was in this treatment center, they talked about unmanageability, but they didn't talk about powerlessness, right? So I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found somebody to take me through the book. And he's showing me, you know, what powerlessness is, right, and what unmanageability is. And we went through the book, and he showed me what an alcoholic was. He didn't say, you're an alcoholic, you better work the steps. He went through the book slowly. And I had gotten through high school, I knew how to read, but when it came to the book, I would just look at the big book and it just didn't make any sense to me, and I'd kind of gloss over. And but he went through paragraph by paragraph, and he would just explain to me what it meant, you know. And I can remember when I got to AA, right? When I'm in this treatment center, it's all other adolescents like me. So it was easy to feel like I belonged because I was surrounded by other people my age. But then I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And to a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I think I might have been kind of a novelty, you know, because I'm young and I'm sober, and like, and most of the people in AA were much older, and I remember thinking, you know, I've got to find, not only do I need to find somebody who gets being young and sober, but I also need to find somebody who's really cool, because I'm cool, right? Which is not far from the truth. So, you know, I found this sponsor, and I started working with him, and he got me involved in ASCIPOT. It was in Tucson that year, and kind of threw me onto the host committee, and service really saved me at first, because I was insane. Like, if anybody here has stayed sober for an extended period of time without working the steps, you know what it feels like to be truly insane. And I was. And, you know, but doing service, it at least for those moments when I was helping somebody else or helping the committee or whatever, it helped me to not think of myself for at least a few minutes. And my sponsor started taking me through the steps, you know, and that's where the transformation really started to happen, you know. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was certain that I was different, that everybody here did not understand. And sometimes I felt that people kind of played into that, because, you know, people would say things like, and you guys have probably heard this, it's so great that you're getting sober young, you know. It's so great to see you here in AA. And I think about that for a minute. I think, well, is it really that great that I was that miserable, that young, that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous? Because nobody comes here and says, like, you know, I'm looking for a new hobby, why don't I work the 12 steps, right? If you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you've got some misery in your life. And, you know, but what I learned from going through the steps and really having a sponsor to explain what this stuff was about was that, you know, in the end, I'm not any different than somebody coming to AA who's 60, you know. And because the thing that we have in common in Alcoholics Anonymous is that powerlessness over alcohol, right? It's that not only when I start drinking can I not tell you how much I'm going to drink, or I might not be able to stop. My other problem is that I can't stay stopped, right? I say, I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink. Maybe it'll warm me up. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink. Screw them. Right? And it describes it perfectly in the book. And I'm so grateful that I had those experiences, because I could look at it and I could say, that's me, right? If that's an alcoholic, then I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, thank God for that smile. He was so patient with me. So were people in AA, because I thought I knew so much when I got here. And I knew nothing. And people were... You know, they let me talk, even though I wasn't bringing anything to the table, and they would answer my questions after the meetings, you know. So growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I got sober when I was 15, but I probably had the emotional maturity of a 10-year-old-ish. I know it's not that much more now. Most of the people that know me would say, but it's a little bit more. So what happened in AA is that, you know, I was given all these tools that helped me stay sober, right? And what I found out was these tools that were given to me that helped me to stay sober were also very useful outside of AA, right? The same stuff that I practiced here, I was able to use in going to school, right? So here I am going to college, and a lot of people in college, you know, they were like drinking and going to parties and stuff. And I was an engineering student, so I didn't have any time. Even if I wanted to go to parties, I didn't have time to. But you know, at that point I was involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had been to young people's conferences, and I understood that I could be sober and I could be young, right? And that I could have a good time, I could have an enjoyable time, and I didn't have to drink to do that, you know? And so I took what I learned here and I took it to school, right? You know, what do? Well, you show up on time, right? You pay attention to the person who's talking, who's usually the instructor. If you have questions, you ask for help. I think these things are probably very apparent to people that aren't screwed up, but like, for me, I had to learn that here, you know, and being honest, right? I needed to, if I needed help with something, I needed to tell the truth. If I did something wrong, I needed to tell the truth, right? And so I just took what I learned here, and I took it to school. And what ended up happening is I did really well in school, right? And I try to practice the same thing at work, you know, and I try to practice it just when I'm out in the world, right? You know, what did they teach me here in Alcoholics Anonymous? They taught me that, you know, love and tolerance of others is our code, right? So when I'm having a bad day and I pull up into the drive-thru and they're like taking a long time, I don't tell them to, you know, hurry the F up, you know, I ask them how their day is going, right? Is that in my nature? No. You know, that's what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if it's me that's coming up with the ideas, then I'm gonna do what I want when I want. So, you know, I've been given so much, opportunity in sobriety. You know, I graduated from college and I did really well in school, and, people would ask me for help and stuff like that, and it's not because, you know, I have some great ability. It's just because I took what I learned here and I used it in my life, right? And, you know, I had a job where I got to travel all over the place and it's funny, I would be at these, they'd send me to work with, you know, one of the clients or something like that, right? And I would catch myself all the time thinking like, what if this person knew who I really was, right? What if they knew my real story and the kind of stuff that I used to do and the way that I used to treat people, right? And they'd be horrified, and they would never want me near anything of value in their company. And but that wasn't the case, right? I was given all these different opportunities, and I think the biggest thing for me was that coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to meet other people that understood who I was and what was going on with me and what was going on in my head. And I didn't have to sit there and have to explain it to them. They just understood, you know. And I met people here who truly had my back, you know, that would do anything for me if I asked, if I needed help, you know. And that's something that I just didn't have before I got here. So, you know, for me, when I got here, I needed to, people to understand that I was different because I was young, you know. And what happened as a result of sticking around was that I understood that I have the same alcoholism as anybody else that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and that the same steps will work for me. And more importantly, what I need to do is that I need to be here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I need to be here in meetings for the people that came in who feel the way that I felt, you know. Because what I try to remember is you know, life can get busy and you know, a lot of good stuff may come into your life, but I always have to remember where I came from, right? Because when I first came in, if everybody was like, you know, I'd go to that meeting, but I'm really busy at work. Or I'd go to that meeting, but I'm just going to go hang out with my friends instead. I have to remember, like, why do I have that job? Oh, because of the stuff I learned here. Why do I have those friends? Oh, because I met them in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I have to remember that, you know, so if you're here, this can work for you, you know. There's nobody who's too young to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's nobody who's too old to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to grow up here, you know, and to learn how to live as a sober human being in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope, you know, if you're new, I hope you find somebody who's been through the 12 steps before you, and ask them how to do it, you know. That's all that matters. And if you go through that process, you know, you have such an opportunity that a lot of people will never get, you know. Because when you were talking about some of the people, you know, that you got sober with, and I was thinking about that, and one of the guys that I was in treatment with, you know, he he was driving drunk and decided to run from a cop and killed somebody, and now he's in prison for a long time, you know. And there's other people that are dead that you know, that I was in treatment with, and why me, right? I look back, I mean, of the hundreds and hundreds of people that I was in treatment with, like, why am I still sober? And the only answer, there's two answers that I can come to. One is grace of God, and the second is that, you know, I did the work. And anybody else is open to that same experience. So I'm very grateful to be here, and if you're new, please come back. Thanks.
Thank you, James. Last but not least, Melissa.
Hi, Melissa, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Melissa. We want you, Melissa. Lots and lots and lots.
How much?
Love you guys, too. Thanks for having me speak today. I'm just grateful to be here. What a cool experience. I guess I'll start with my sobriety date is March 27, 2001. I got sober also when I was 15. I think we're all 15-year-olds that got sober. I have a sponsor. My sponsor knows I'm her sponsor. She knows she sponsors me. There has been points of my sobriety that, you know, they didn't know that. Also, I do have a home group. It's the Freely Given Women's Meeting. It's actually just right down the street. It's a great meeting Monday night, 7:00. It's great to see a bunch of women here. When I got here, it was the women who saved my life. I had no idea how to interact sober, and women really saved me and taught me how to do that. So I guess I'll just start with, you know, I grew up in St. Charles, Missouri. And I had a pretty normal life. My family drinks a lot. You know, some of them are alcoholics, some of them have died of alcoholism, some of them just drink a lot and do it manageably. But that just kind of was my life. And I remember as a kid, I was really insecure, really uncomfortable. Look back at pictures of me, and I was always the person hiding in the corner, just really, really shy. And that was just me. I was insecure. I was this chubby little thing, and, you know, just didn't have that great of social skills. I didn't know how to deal with emotions. I remember when I was little, if I was angry, which I was very angry as a kid, I would just go by myself. You know, I would cry and I would go by myself, and I just didn't know how to deal with life. And, I remember up until the point that the first time I drank, there was just always that tension and that insecurity within me. And the first time I drank it was, I was either 9 or 10, and it was at Christmas. That's just what my family did. We had a big dinner, and then they just drank, you know. And the kids always were in the basement for some reason. You know, as a kid, this is not normal, but my parents would lock me in the basement so they can party upstairs. But that was just normal to me, you know. And so, again, it was Christmas. I wasn't locked in the basement that year, but we were put in the basement where the bar was, which is just interesting. But, you know, they had their stock upstairs, and I don't know what got us intrigued about it, but me and my cousin, you know, we went and snuck it. And, you know, I loved everything about it. I loved that I was doing what I wasn't told, and I love that it was like the secret mission that we were on, and one of us was looking out, the other one was running to the fridge and downing a beer, and I loved it. You know, I remember the feeling of the first time of being drunk. I felt relieved. I just felt relieved, and I fell in love. I loved the fact that I wasn't insecure anymore, and that I didn't have to think about emotions or anger or any of that stuff. And so, looking back, that's clearly a problem. I'm 9, 10 years old, and I am finding that much relief from alcohol. And to me, and I'll get into that more later, but that's what makes me an alcoholic is the way my body reacts to alcohol. Holidays became my favorite. You know, I looked forward to being able to drink and sneak beer and get drunk, and it wasn't a daily thing at that point, obviously. But I knew I wanted to do it again, and got a little bit older. I got into some other outside issues. The first time I smoked weed, I was 11. I remember at that point, I was just a nerd, and I was insecure, and I was so uncomfortable with myself. And it was sixth grade, and I remember I hated my friends. Like, I had this girl, her name was Amber, and she was like, she talked really fast, and she was like, oh. And then we had this other friend, and her name was Laura, and she talked so slow. Her dad worked at a morgue, and like, it was totally like the morgue's child. And you know, I remember being on the phone, and I'm gonna date myself. We were talking on three-way, and I was like, God, I hate these people, you know, but it was my life. And, you know, and so not too long after that, suddenly these popular girls like wanted to hang out with me. And, you know, and so I was like, I instantly ditched these two girls and was like suddenly cool, like completely changed how I dressed. And, you know, just was like anything they said, I was like, oh yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, totally. I'm cool too. And so the first time they ever talked about drinking and getting high, I was like, yeah, absolutely. I've done that before. And, but you know, inside I was like, oh my God, like, I don't know, for like the longest time I did DARE, and I like thought that, you know, I was never ever gonna do drugs, and I wasn't gonna be one of those people. And that was the feeling, was like, oh shit, what am I gonna do? But I was just so desperate, you know, it was like, I hate my life now, I want it to be better, and you know, and I really admired these girls, so I did, you know, and the first time I ever got high, it was a horrible experience. I thought I was gonna die. It was on Easter Sunday, and I just thought I was gonna die. You know, I can get into all details, but either way, I just thought I was gonna die. And I remember getting home because I had left with my sister, which she was a big influence over me. We were partners in crime, and so we got back home, and I couldn't handle it, and so I was sick. And I was so hungry, but I just went downstairs and slept. And it was horrible. But as soon as I sobered up, I was like, I want more. I want to do this again. And you know, to me, that's just sick. I don't know. For some reason, I love it. And so, you know, that lifestyle just took off. My sister was a lot older. She's a lot more experienced. So it wasn't like this. I know it started out a little bit weekend warrior-ish, but I got into some stuff like really quickly at a very young age. I was hanging out with, my sister hung out with older people, so I'm just hanging out with older people, and you know, I was hanging out in meth houses and just doing all the stuff that like a 13, 14 year old should not be doing, but I loved it, and you know, and I always pretended like I could hold my own, and you know, and what I loved is like when I drank, I fit in, you know, and I didn't feel like I didn't belong there, and I knew how to talk to you guys. But when I wasn't drinking, I was quiet. I was really polite. I just didn't know like what to do with myself, and so that just continued. I had some ups and downs. I think it was seventh grade. You know, I was kind of the girl that like, if you knew you wanted to like drink or get high, like I was the person you went to. And, so there was this girl who came to me, and she's like, you know, having lots of problems. Like, she was fighting with her mom, and, her boyfriend had just broke up with her, and she thought she was pregnant. And, in seventh grade, so 14 years old, 13, 14 years old, my solution was, you need to get high. You need to get drunk. And, you know, so what I did, I got her high and drunk. And looking back, it's like, what is wrong? You know, like that mentality, but that was my solution in my life. It was, I didn't know how to deal with life. The only stability I had was to drink or use. And so, long story short, the next day she came to school and got in trouble for shit that we were doing and, you know, narked on me. And you know, so I was like under investigation, and they searched me and all this stuff. And I remember it was like the worst day ever. And I left school that day. I didn't get in trouble. They didn't find anything on me. But the first thing I did is I went and drank, and I went and got high because I didn't know what else to do. And so at that point, I was like, okay, I'm going to pull it together. But I didn't. You know, I ended up really, really messing up that chick's life. She ended up having to switch schools because I just got a lot of people to turn against her. And then at the same time, too, like, I'm really good at, like, putting this, like, really sweet face on. But, like, I'm, like, a sick alcoholic. you know, and I did a very good job at, like, my parents would be like, oh, Melissa's so great, and we love her, and she does so such wonderful things, because they're looking at my sister, and she's just this outward, like, destructive person, and, you know, so I just got away with a lot of stuff, but yet I created a lot of wreckage. The next year, I ended up getting suspended from school for 10 days for having paraphernalia. That same night, I somehow manipulated my mother into letting me go with my friends to this dance, and I ended up getting drunk and getting arrested. And, you know, it was unmanageable, and at that point, I was like, okay, like, I am going to turn it around. So it was, like, the last semester of the school year, and I was like, I'm going to get straight A's. I'm going to, like, start practicing it. I'm going to be on the cheerleading team. I'm really going to turn around. I'm going to be on student council. So I had all these plans for myself because I knew, like, what I was doing I didn't like, and so I was going to fix it, and these are the things that were going to fix it. And so I ended up, you know, doing pretty well that year. You know, I was the vice president of my choir, and I was, got good, like, for the last semester, got straight A's. You know, I pulled it together and had, like, some serious plans for my freshman year. And then the summer came, and I just partied, and I just couldn't help myself, and I had a lot of fun. It was awesome. There wasn't really many consequences, and so that led me into high school, and again, it just continued. From that point, honestly, there just wasn't that many more consequences. If anything, I learned from my mistakes, and I just got sneakier, and, you know, my parents were, like, just amazed at, like, how I maintained a 4.0 and how I played sports and how I did this stuff, but yet I was living this secret life, and I was leaving and, like, going doing acid, and we're like, would, you know, go do acid and then go swim on the swim team and just do different things like that. And you know, it was crazy. And, honestly, the biggest thing for me and where I hit my bottom is, like, I don't relate when people say they came in and they've lost everything, which that's why I don't, that doesn't make you a member if you've lost everything. But what I do relate with is that emotional, that bottom, that desperation. And towards it, you know, it would be great. And then, it was the emotions of life I could not handle. And the only way I knew how to handle was to drink. And that was the only solution for myself. And, but I didn't know that at that point, so I tried a bunch of things. I tried the sports, I tried the diets, I tried everything. I tried self-help books, all this stuff, and it would always be up and down, up and down, up and down. And then towards the end, it was more on the downside, and sometimes it would go up a little bit, and it was on the downside, and I just couldn't figure it out. You know, I was like, well, you know, like, that guy didn't work out that well, so maybe I should try this one, or maybe I'll just go to church. And, you know, I went to church for a little bit, and, you know, had some spiritual awakenings, and it was awesome, but I ended up drinking again, and I couldn't just stay stopped. He was talking about staying stopped, and that's something I wasn't good at, you know, but in my mind, it was just, I got this, like, you know, like, everything looks really good, like, I should feel good, and I just couldn't get there. And, you know, honestly, my bottom was kind of weird, because I could stay sober for a little bit, but I couldn't stay stopped. And I love, in the big book, it talks about I can't control my I can't be happy and control my drinking. And that's just so true for me, because I could. Like, there would be times I would stop drinking, but either I was always running towards alcohol or I was running away from it. You know, so it'd be like, how can I get it? Or like, how can I stop? And I was completely obsessed with alcohol. You know, I had that mental obsession. And, you know, so my bottom was just, all I really remember is dark. There wasn't anything intense and significant that happened, except for that I was just incredibly depressed. I was very angry. Oh yeah, I mentioned that I was angry as a kid, but, you know, I would just, this started as a kid, but it continued as I was drinking too, but I just couldn't really look in the mirror. I was just so insecure, and just, there's just something always so wrong with me. And, towards the end, I remember, like, not being able to look at myself in the mirror more than, like, a minute, or I would start breaking things. And I was just so angry and so upset with myself and just didn't understand what was happening. And honestly, I thought it was crazy. And, so what, ended up happening, I was just depressed. I remember my dad sat me down and he was like, you know, Melissa, I think what your problem is, like, I had just redecorated my room and it, like, painted, it was like when I was on an up, and I painted it bright yellow and made it like look really cool. And then I was on a down. He's like, you know, I think the problem is the color of your room. And I remember being like so mad at him, like, and I didn't know what the problem was, but you know, just as like my parent, like I wanted him to fix it. But I wasn't about to tell him like, well, you know, I just can't. And honestly, I didn't know it was my alcoholism, but you know, I just remember we were all desperate and I didn't know what to do. And so I just sunk into this deep, deep depression. And, and there's really not much to it. It was just depression. And I remember, trying a few other things, thinking that it would help, and just nothing was working at that time. The only thing I knew to do was drink, and I couldn't even drink and, be happy. And it wasn't like the old times. And so my last desperation moment was, and I think this is when I took my first step, and even my first, second, and third step was, I realized, like, I don't have a problem. I don't have the answer. I don't know what the problem is. I need help. And that was the first time I mentally thought that, and I prayed and I asked God, please give me the strength to kill myself, because that was like my last ditch effort. Like, that must be the only thing. Give me the strength to kill myself, or give me something better, was my prayer. And I was just desperate. And within a couple days, one of my friends that I kind of like was using with for a little bit, somehow we ended up like interacting, and she invited me to a meeting. It was a treatment center for young people, and she invited me to one of their support group meetings, and I knew I think that's what I need. I didn't think like, oh, I'm an alcoholic or I have a drug problem. It was just like, that sounds like good. And then also the great thing too was she seemed different. And so I went and I was blown away. These people like wanted to hang out with me, like at the end. Nobody really wanted to hang out with me. And I wasn't this like outwardly like evil person. I was pretty good at like keeping people like, I was polite, you know? So people like usually liked me. And, but towards the end, I remember like these brides, like, come pick me up. Like, let's go do this. And I remember everybody's like, you want to ride? You want to ride with me? Blah, blah. And they were like arguing and I'm like, who I'm going to ride with, and you know, like introducing me to everybody. And I was just blown away. Like, holy cow, you want me around. And then, you know, we get into the meeting and people start speaking and sharing. And, you guys are like saying the things I have been feeling, but had never said out loud. And it blew me away. And to me, that's what, you know, it was. The alcoholism. You guys spoke about the alcoholism, and you spoke about when you drank, you have no control of what happens. You have no control if you're going to be able to stop or not. And I just thought it was crazy, but you guys called it alcoholism, and so I knew I was at home. And you know, that was that was it for me. I got sober. I ended up going into treatment, and it was awesome. I learned a lot of stuff. They didn't necessarily take me through the 12 steps, but they did. Like the principles and the treatment setup that they had set up was, you know, I got to like look at my first step, my second step, my third step, and go through an inventory, and it really, really helped me. But then also the fellowship, you know, I had a lot of young people around me, which was awesome. And you know, I didn't have alcohol in my body, so I had no idea how to interact. So again, I was there really polite and insecure. But I found people that, you know, I really like looked up to, and I stuck with them, and I had no clue what was going on. You guys would say all this stuff and I'd be like, yeah, totally, yeah, and pretend like I know what you're talking about, but I have no clue. And everybody understands, you come into Alcoholics Anonymous and everybody's telling you to do these things and read that and do that, and you're like, what are you talking about? I just stayed, and eventually it started making sense. So I just stayed sober. Life got really good. Right after treatment, at 7 months, I met my future husband, or I guess I had known him for a while, but we started dating. So that was very cool. I've just grown up in sobriety, and I've gotten a lot of opportunities. I stayed in high school. A lot of people I knew that got sober did not stay in high school. And that was a serious challenge. You know, interacting with people day in, day out that was continuing to get higher. People didn't necessarily like, I was like 15 years old and I'm trying to work on myself and be this better person, and then I'm in high school with all these people that like, you're self-centered when you're 15, and it was a struggle, and there was times that I did really well and there's times that I yelled at cops and teachers, and it was like a crazy experience, but I'm really glad I did it. And so I got to graduate high school, and I was proud that when I graduated high school, I always thought about like, when I graduate high school, I'm gonna have the biggest party, I'm gonna get so wasted. But I was so excited that I was like, there won't be any alcohol at my graduation party. And I remember that being kind of weird for my aunts and uncles, but it was like, but it's my party, so we're not gonna drink. And that was so cool to me. And then I've gotten to do, I went and worked for that treatment center that I got sober at. Got to like work professionally in the, the counseling field, and that was really cool too. So I got to experience a lot of good stuff from there. But then, with time, we get sick, and we forget. Take away the alcohol, you still have the alcoholic, and that's what I have. I've run into, and what's great is I get to go back to the steps and again see the alcoholism in my life and realize that I belong here. And that's the thing I wanted to talk about too. And I know we're running out of time here, they're both speaking, and just the insecurity. And people say things to you when you get sober young, and I just felt insecure and awkward about it. Sometimes I'll still have those moments like, oh, do I belong here? But then I go to a meeting and I sit down next to a person who's a male who's 50 years older than me and grew up in Brooklyn, and I can still relate to that alcoholism. And that's why I know I belong here, is because it's not about who you are, what you did. It's about the alcoholism and how we drink, and that the fact that I can sit next to any of you guys and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I get better, and we all get better. And that's why I know I belong here. So it's pretty amazing. And then life is pretty amazing. I also I got married in sobriety. I just bought a house in sobriety, and I have like a big person job, and sometimes I look back and I'm like, wow, I'm not 15 anymore. Like, pay bills and like do this stuff. But what's awesome is like, I've gotten to do all that sober, and that is a miracle in itself, because I could barely just socialize not sober when I was younger, and so it's really cool to be able to have this today, and all of it is, again, I have to remember, like, that's all the pretty stuff, but it is all the result of working the steps and being involved. That's a really, really big thing, is no matter how insecure you are, go get a service commitment. That will put you in a place so that you'll be interacting, and you'll get something good from it. That's what I have. I know I've really struggled over the past couple of years of getting involved in AA and stuff, and I got involved with Icky Paw, and it really saved my life. It put me in the middle of things, and it's pretty amazing what this program can do for you. So I just love this program. I'm really glad that I got to speak today, and with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. And on behalf of the host, we have some gifts for you guys. Thank you. And I want to thank, how we thank the panel members again for sharing their experience, strength, and hope. I want to make one announcement. The talent show is going on right after this in the Canyon Room. So I want to see all you guys there. Can you please help me close with the responsibility pledge?